The Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Welcome back.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back, everyone. Nosebleeds, the exclusive MLB podcast of WFUV Sports. It's my honor to host today to be a pinch hitter, if you will, no pun intended, sub in, and we've got Angel here, we've got John, talking about these New York Mets. But before we get right into it, John, how's it feel as a trainee to be on here with your boys? Well, actually, you do know Brody, so it is your boy, both your boys. How's it feel to be on air right now?
This is great, great experience. I have minimal experience with this, but no, I'm looking very forward to it. I think this is going to go well.
Well, John, when you talk about minimal experience, sometimes, as Tony Stark said in Iron Man 3, you got to run before you can walk, you know?
That was great.
And, yeah, great pull right there.
That was a great reference.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about some of those runs from the New York Mets these past few days. The seemingly impossible happened on Monday. Before we even get into the great game yesterday for the Amazons, on Monday it was the doubleheader versus the Braves that happened on Monday because of Hurricane Helene, which canceled the games on
Wednesday and Thursday. Yes,
and that was obviously a terrible hurricane. Our hearts go out to them and everyone in the South, and so that postponed the game down in Atlanta, and now we had the situation of a doubleheader on Monday, and in that unique situation of right after the doubleheader, you had the game one of the wild card against the Milwaukee Brewers. So I want to get right into it. What we saw on Monday, I think, was just almost a microcosm. That expression, microcosm, it's a smaller example of the larger picture. A microcosm of the whole 2024 season of the Mets. The ups and the downs. This team has been through a horrible April. Or excuse me, a second half that was really horrible in April, but it depends on where you look in that month. And then you look at late May, that was a really rough point, and I had the privilege to beat report in late May for one of those games when they were like 10 games underneath 500. Then they had
11 games under 500. And then the whole Jorge Lopez throwing his glove into the stands incident happened. And from there, since that day, they have the best record in baseball, I believe 63-39.
Yeah. Yeah, it's you said it yourself, Pro Man. You know, just it's all right. You can laugh. That's your nickname. Just how Brody is Angel's nickname. But looking at June, that was when the spark started, as you just noted, John. It was a June that they had one of the best runs in baseball up to the All-Star break. Then post All-Star break, late July, August, got into a little bit of a slump. Some back and forths in terms of momentum and, you know, whether they're in the wild card spot or not. And they found a way to persevere. In September, they kept their head above water. And just enough, it was just enough for Monday. They just needed to take one game in that doubleheader. And so in that one game, we had a bunch of lead changes. First, Atlanta got off to a 2-0 start, Ozzie Albies, and then you had Laureano homering, making it 3-0, and then you had Alvarez starting that scoring. So when I look at what happened, I mean, I want to let you guys talk about it because I've been speaking too much. What did you see from the players and from this team as a whole on Monday that just struck you?
I feel like they ignored all the travel because that was also a big thing. They were in Atlanta, had to go back to Milwaukee for the final regular season finale, and then come back to Atlanta for that two-game doubleheader before going back to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So it was up, down, up, down. And then, but as far as the game is concerned, I mean, you want production from every spot in the lineup. You want guys getting hits in your 7, 8, 9 hitters, all those guys. And that's exactly what we saw. JD Martinez, you know, veteran hitter who had been in a slump for quite some time, broke out of it, scored two crucial runs in that game in the pinch hit situation. Yes, Starling Marte, who's been on the team for quite some time now, again, another veteran of the game, been up for quite some time, hitting in the clutch in big moments like that. And then Howie Rose put it perfectly. When the Braves had taken the lead again, it was a, I believe, 7-6 game. And then Francisco Lindor hit a 2-run homer to give the Mets the lead. And he said that is an MVP hit, whether he wins one or not. And listen, we're living in the Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani era of baseball. Those two guys are going to be MVP winners, perhaps, every single year for the foreseeable future. But at the same time,
he's this team's MVP.
Yes. And he is a damn good second runner-up MVP in the National League, just like Bobby Witt Jr. is in the American League to Aaron Judge as well. But that game, I mean, it's just, how could you not be romantic about baseball? I mean, it was poetic. I mean, truthfully, game 161 in a doubleheader to end off the regular season MLB, you could not have gotten better than that. It was back and forth baseball, both teams, the nitty gritty, needing to win, wanting to win. And a lot of people counted the Mets out. They figured, okay, Atlanta's home. They, you know, they haven't had that whole travel debacle going on. But the Mets persevered.
I mean, when it comes to Monday, you think about that situation like game 163 in any other regular season, right? And for game one of that doubleheader to be as historic as it was, as back and forth as it was from the eighth inning and ninth inning, it was truly one of the best games that a fan of the game can never watch. I mean, we know from this radio station, like, I'm not a Met fan, but I watched that game.
But in spirit, you
in,
were.
In spirit.
For that game.
I'm not.
And now you are
I
right
plead,
now. With
I
your...
plead the fifth on that comment. But when watching that game, just seeing the back and forth, the Mets grab the lead, the Braves grab the lead, and then Francisco Lindor being the MVP of the team with that two-run shot, I mean, he is the reason why you're in Milwaukee right now. He is the reason he saved your season at a point where you thought you were going to lose Lindor to his back injury to end off the season. He comes back, not 100%, and shows you, especially in that game one doubleheader with Atlanta, why he is the best player in the NL. I've had my comments about Ohtani being the MVP. I take that back. You know, Lindor has been just an unbelievable player. The Mets are writing off this, you know, just fun time right now. And I think the Mets are a team that they, we talk about this all the time. They grind out of bats. They come in when the momentum's on this, their side. Once you give them this Met team momentum, once you kind of give them a belief that they can win the game, they're going to win the game. You know, they kind of write off that energy and you can never count them out. And we saw even in yesterday's game for the wild card series, Milwaukee may have been up towards the fourth, fifth inning, but you can't count out the Mets. And then once they score and grab the lead, they have the pitching to maintain the lead. And you saw that in the Atlanta series, in the Atlanta doubleheader. You saw that in the Milwaukee game yesterday. The Mets are, they're very promising right now. It's exciting to watch finally.
I mean, you could even paint a little bit of historical context going back to the 2022 season. I mean, you know, you had Max Scherzer get traded at the deadline, and that's how the Mets acquired Ronald Acuña Jr.'s little brother, Luis Angel. And in Lindor's absence, he's been a star. I mean, he broke out. He was hitting home runs. He was hitting in the clutch. He was hitting for average, hitting for power, stealing bases even. I mean, he did it all in Lindor's absence. And having that guy perhaps maybe even play it short and have Lindor at DH with the back injury, that's not a bad idea for the postseason as well. I'm glad that he's on the postseason roster.
They just have a lot of pieces on this team that fit their role. No one has to be the star. You know Lindor's a star. He doesn't even have to feel like being the one guy that can produce on that team, right? You have 1-9 actually clicking at the right time of the year. And as long as every piece of the team plays to their role and just wants to be part of a winning team instead of having to be the hero, that's what's going to be the success factor. And if the Mets are going to make it out the wildcard series, if they're going to make it to NLCS and the World Series beyond that.
Another success factor, 36-year-old veteran second baseman, career backup, Jose Iglesias. Oh, my God. is doing a feature with Pitbull now, but
yeah,
regardless,
remix. The remix, John.
In Jeff McNeil's absence, Jeff McNeil went down, big part of the Mets lineup. You know, he will be missed this postseason, but the fractured wrist certainly wasn't ideal, but Iglesias has filled that spot tremendously too. A 20-game hit streak that is now leading into the postseason from the regular season, so...
I agree 100%, John. And also, I want to, and you as well, Brody, I think you're both just been on point. But when you talk about your, when you were comparing the 2022 Mets team that...
These Mets.
Yes, that lost to the Padres in that wild card series, which is just brutal. It was brutal to watch that. What differences, besides the different players, do you see like a culture difference from 2022 when they got swept versus this team that doesn't seem to quit?
I think it's more of just the doubt factor. I mean, in 2022, they won 101 or 102 baseball games. So no one was doubting the fact that the Mets are like a serious contender.
And they thought that they could make the World Series. That's
but they didn't
saying.
Even win the division with that immaculate record of theirs. Right. They still didn't even, they failed to win their own division. This year, there was no guarantee that they would even make the postseason. I mean, the Arizona Diamondbacks were still in play prior to that doubleheader. You know, I'm sure they were praying for a sweep one way or the other so they could have been in the postseason. I mean, after all, they scored the most runs in Major League Baseball this season and did not make the postseason. I mean, they were in the World Series last year, so there's all the possible what-ifs and the hypotheticals, but we're here to talk about New York baseball, and that's with the Mets. And I seriously think that the Mets have gotten a lot of frustration out on that game in Milwaukee, and I think that they're going to continue that tonight and tomorrow if need be.
You know what I think? You talk about the Diamondbacks, and this might go viral, so just everything I say is going to be amazing, so just listen. I'm just gassing myself up there, but when you look at this Mets team, you know who this Mets team reminds me of? I know that you guys know what I'm going to say. They played the Milwaukee Brewers last year in the NL Wild Card Series. Then they went off to sweep the Los Angeles Dodgers. And then they went all the way to the World Series. These New York Mets, these 2024 New York Mets, remind me of the 2023 Arizona Diamondbacks. I'm telling you right now, I can feel it. But it's also watching the team. They're similar in some characteristics. They've got kind of a unique blend of players, and they're also a little bit light on pitching, right? Not exactly, the Mets of 2015 where they had an ace on the mound for every postseason game.
That whole staff was legendary.
Yeah, so I think that the Mets are this year's Diamondbacks. I'm not saying officially that they can go that deep, but I'm saying
it's possible.
It's possible. But in all seriousness, I do think that the absolute ceiling for this Mets team, the absolute ceiling, is a NLCS appearance. That's what I think.
100%. I mean, if you get out this round alone against Milwaukee, then you have a date with Philadelphia. A nice NL East clash. I think both teams have not faced each other in the postseason ever, so that would be amazing just to see that matchup. You know, Philly with the bye, they're prepping for any team, and the Mets, they want Philly, right? They want to make their name in their division alone. And if you can take care of Philly, then you're thinking to yourself, you have either the Dodgers, Padres, or the Braves in the NLCS. Let's just say it's Padres and Dodgers, right? And they clash 5 games. Either team wins. I'll give it to San Diego for just an example.
The Mets can get some revenge in that.
That's
instance.
What I'm saying, right? Like, the Mets see San Diego, they're going to want that revenge.
From 2022.
I think, though, like,
retribution.
Their path to the NLCS and then whoever they face in NLCS will benefit their cause just because of the. I actually agree with you with the comparison with the Arizona Diamondbacks of last year, because just the way that both teams play. The underdog story too, the grit and grind. Like, the Mets play fundamental baseball, all right? They know if you need to make contact, they're going to get that. If you need the home run, they're going to get that.
Whatever it takes to win.
Whatever it takes to win. I mean, if you saw yesterday, just to tie the game alone, Iglesias sliding into first base just to be safe and not get the last out of the inning. I mean, it's just small things like that.
That hustle.
The hustle. It's just extending the inning. It's little things like that is why the Mets have been so successful down the stretch. They're not worried about winning the games by blowouts or winning the games by the long ball or anything like that, like other teams in this playoff run. So as long as they keep playing to their true self and they don't, you know, try anything that they can't do, that's why they can make a long run to the NLCS, and then whoever they face can possibly beat them into the World Series. So I can see the comparisons with Arizona Diamondbacks. I think the Mets just really love this, like, underdog story. Like, you talked about earlier comparing them to 2022 when you guys won 100-plus wins. You guys were expected to win. Like, you had that kind of on your back, the pressure.
It's very, very uncharacteristic of the Mets to have those expectations.
Exactly. But you go into this year, it was not until the last game of the season you didn't know if you were going to make it in the playoffs. Now that you make the playoffs, not a lot of people are writing for you to even make it to the NLCS or even the World Series. So you have that underdog mentality throughout the entire playoff run, and you guys feed off that. That's why it's different. If you guys were favorites in any round, that's when you kind of can get to yourself, mentally, like into your head too much.
And you become your own worst enemy.
Exactly. You become your worst enemy in that aspect. But as long as the Mets just keep doing what they're doing, I think we say this whole podcast, like, the limit is, there is no limit for them.
Sky's the limit.
Sky is the limit.
So what do you guys think of tonight's game? It's going to be, again, at Milwaukee. Starting pitch is 7:38, and it's going to be there's also, just mentioning this in addition, if there is a Game 3, there's going to be a watch party at Citi Field Thursday night.
They should have done that for this game, man.
You think so?
Should have done it for all the games. Why not?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
You're not guaranteed to go back to Citi Field in the postseason as is, you know? So, I mean, a little watch party would have been nice.
Yeah. Yeah, but for tonight's game, do you guys think that the Brewers answer back, or do you think that the Mets can just run away with a 2-0 head to that NLDS with the Phillies? John?
You would be a delusional Mets fan to expect anything but the series being tied up. But, I mean, optimistically, I would like to see the Mets keep bringing the hammer down on the Brewers, but Milwaukee has proven to be underrated in a lot of areas. For example, second baseman Bryce Turang had 50 stolen bases this year. I mean, obviously everyone talks about Ohtani and all of his stolen bases because it matches the home runs, but the Brewers led the league in stolen bases. And as great of a young catcher as Francisco Alvarez is, that he has had a lot of problem getting guys out when they try and steal second or even third.
I mean, when it comes to game two, like, looking at the pitching matchup as well, Sean Manaea against Frankie Montas, I mean, I'm not
saying... Yankees legend Frankie Montas.
Nah, don't get me started on that one. I don't want to sound like a biased Yankee fan right now, but I do. I thought this series alone was going to go to three. I do think Milwaukee answers back. Even whoever won yesterday, I would have thought the other team was going to win today. Like, I saw three games in the future for this series because both teams are equally matched when it comes to offense and pitching, in my opinion. Sean Manaea does not have the best numbers in the postseason. That's what kind of will fry me right now as a Met fan.
But he was the arguably the ace 100%. Of this team.
100%. But we all know when the postseason starts, clock turns back. You know, like, all stats are erased. You can have a great regular season.
Kershaw, terrible in the postseason.
Exactly.
One of the best regular season pitchers of all time. But post, anti-clutch.
One of the... Good word. One of the worst. So I have faith that Milwaukee will answer back and even the series. But even if we get to a game three, I still have the Mets winning it because I think ultimately they have just a little bit more pitching against Milwaukee to beat them. And Milwaukee, I can't even think to myself, like, who would be the third starter. The Mets came into the postseason with at least 3 to 4 starters ready to go for any, if it's, you know, DSCS, wildcard series. So
there's also injury possibilities. I mean, of course, Brandon Woodruff is not even an option for the Brewers, whereas the Mets could possibly have Kodai Senga come back. I mean, he would have been Rookie of the Year if it wasn't for Corbin Carroll.
I mean, the Mets, every team going into the postseason has their question marks in pitching and injuries and stuff like that. So I'm not even going to look at that. I'm going to look at what the roster they have for both sides of the field. The Mets, you know, Milwaukee, I think Milwaukee wins it as long as they don't make the same mistakes coaching-wise that they did yesterday, then they can maintain and win this game and then go into tomorrow and, you know, better team wins. I think Milwaukee beat themselves last night. That's why. That's another reason why.
I mean, they pulled Freddie Peralta after, what, 68 pitches?
Four innings, 68 yeah. pitches. Like, even though he didn't have the best start, he was...
It wasn't a horrible start. I mean, two runs?
Three runs. He was shutting down the Mets nine straight before being pulled out. And then that's when the momentum hits. And that's what we talked about earlier. Like, once the Mets get momentum, they riot out. And clearly you saw that big inning, and it helped them win the game. So, give me Milwaukee. And then, if, you know, want to get into game three talks, that's different. But I still have faith in the Mets.
Yeah, I'm sort of – I'm conflicted here because I sort of agree with you, John, that the Mets nothing comes easy. When the victories do come, they don't come easy, as we saw
in dramatic fashion.
Yes. And unfortunately, I love that this word you just coined. The Mets can be anti-clutch sometimes. That's the pro man word. John's word of the week, anti-clutch. But I think, you know, also, like, my heart says that, the Mets, it's going to be tough, but my mind says Sean Manaea versus Frankie Montas. Sean Manaea is easily the better pitcher in that matchup. I think they can pull out of tonight. I think that's absolutely possible, which would be so exciting for this team. But you know, I'm just going to go with, I'm going to say the Mets win tonight. I'm going to say that because you guys have been saying the opposite just because, you know, it's the Mets and nothing comes easy. And also you think the Brewers still have a little bit of juice in them. So we'll see what happens with that. But let's take a look at what's going on elsewhere in the postseason briefly, if we will. Not only do we have the Mets Brewers, which we've been talking about, but we've also got the Detroit Tigers and the Houston Astros going on right now. It's bottom of the third, tied at zero. One thing I love about postseason baseball, I think this is cool, some people might not like it, is the games can be in the afternoon. And it's like, oh, I'm just getting out of school, I'm just getting out of work, and the game is already on. And it's like, that's unique to the MLB to have that 3:25 start time in October when, you know, there's weird shadows on the field because of the way the sun is and the angle in the sky. So we've got Tigers and Astros right now, still scoreless. It's the end of the third. Then we've got the Kansas City Royals versus the Baltimore Orioles today at 4:38. And we've got the Braves and the Padres for game two today at 8:38, and then for tomorrow it's going to be basically the same matchups I just listed. So first let's go to Tigers Astros. I want to know, what's your take on the Tigers in terms of, you know, how dangerous are they in the postseason? They had a really up and down regular season, but they finished in such a strong way. You could say that they finished with the best run in baseball, not just in the American League in baseball, since around August, I would say. But the Astros, obviously, they have that core. They've been in this position before. They've been a formidable team for over 5 years now. So the question is, who do you think comes out of this Tigers-Astros series? Because I think this might be the most interesting series in the postseason outside of my Mets right now.
I love this series. I have to say, like, I'm not trying to be a hater as a Yankee fan because, you know, I don't root for Houston at all. But this yesterday's game showed me why the Tigers were the best team in the baseball or in the AL ever since, you know, middle of August. They are so unpredictable. They can throw out anything at you. If it's pitching, if it's the offense. You look at the Tigers lineup. You're not expecting any stars. You're not expecting any, like, no true big name really, like, pops up to you.
A lot of young talent and
rookies. They're all young.
Once the Orioles stop.
Yeah, but once they stop playing Javi Baez at shortstop and they let the young talent take over, that's like they were playing with nothing to lose, and they showed how good they were to make the playoffs. Yesterday, Schoolball showed why he's the Cy Young. Six scoreless innings.
He's going to be Triple Crown.
He did win Triple Crown, but because he's a Cy Young and he pitched amazing yesterday, blanked Houston. And Houston is a team where they've been to the ALCS seven straight years. They have the core, like you said. They have the experience, right? You look at
they have the pitching and the bullpen.
You look at the top four of the lineup, you never want to face down in a playoff game, especially when you only have like one game to win in this scenario now. But the Tigers, they don't care about the history or the numbers or what team is in front of them. They're going to keep playing their baseball.
They're chaotic. They're the disruptors. They weren't supposed to be here.
They're already up one.
Yeah. They weren't even supposed to be here. A lot of people didn't think that was going to happen.
No one expected the Tigers. The same way we talk about the Mets and the NL, no one expected the Tigers right now. And I truly love this underdog story on the side of the field. I want the...
Undercat.
I want the Tigers. That's a good one. I want them to win this game. I don't want them to go into game three tomorrow because that would definitely sway the way for Houston to move on if there's a game three, in my opinion. But let them take care of business today. You know, it's fourth inning right now, tie game. Anything can happen. They mix and match. They have people off the bench that come in late into innings, so you never know what to expect. I'm loving this Tiger team, and this might be the year that Houston – finally doesn't make it to the ALCS.
I would love to see them get humbled.
And that'd be great for the Yankees.
I mean, yeah, it'd be great for the Yankees. But as a Yankee fan, you know, just quick off topic, like, you can't be worried about any AL team in the picture right now. If it's Baltimore, if it's the Royals, the Tigers, Houston, like, you are the best team in the AL record-wise, so you have to prove it to yourself. It could be the Yankees and Astros again in ALCS for all I care about this year, and the Yankees will have to still show us that they are legit. All right, so it doesn't matter who you put out there. Yes, of course, we'll be happy if the Astros don't make it because, you know, we're tired of losing to them. But at the end of the day, you want competition every round in the postseason. So the Tigers will bring it. The Astros will bring it, of course. And I'm just hoping the Tigers move on.
Brody, I'm going to have to disagree with you, though. I think that every one of these postseason teams has a very underrated pitching staff, if not an ace. I mean, the Orioles have Corbin Burnes. Cole Reagans on the Royals. I mean, those are some formidable opponents regardless.
Every team has an ace or every team has a pitching staff. You know,
Lugo had a resurgence here going back to Mets.
Of course.
Former Mets.
But you look at the Tigers, they have Skubal and that's it. They traded away Flattery at the trade deadline and you thought that they were going to keep selling after that, right? And then they go on this amazing run. So you look at the Tiger team, they even, Agent Hinch just said it yesterday or before the series, it's going to be a pitching chaos because they don't know who's going after Skubal in any situation they are. It's practically an opener situation for the Tigers right now. They're going to throw out whatever pitching matchups work against the Astros. So that's why when you look at pitching, it's important, but it's Skubal and that's it. And Houston, they're supposed to have more than just Valdez and, you know, just other cats in the bullpen and the starting rotation. But we know Valdez, he struggled yesterday, and after that they don't have Verlander on the roster too, so you never know what to expect. But yeah, just to your point, like, pitching is going to be crucial in the playoffs, yes, and everyone has their one ace. Now can the Tigers keep up the momentum knowing that you only have the one ace while other teams, like you said, the Royals have a Reagans, have a Lugo,
even a Michael Wacha,
have a Wacha. Baltimore, you know, has the Burnes, Eflin tonight, and other people, right? So it just all depends on game two, really.
Yeah, I think in terms of momentum, I think the Tigers are, you know, it's scoreless right now, but I think the Tigers are going to win this series. I think they're in position for, you know, a Cinderella run of their own. And we'll see if they do win. We'll see how they do against the Guardians, against Cleveland in the ALDS. But I want to segue it over. We were talking about the Yankees. Now, there's not much to talk about with the Yankees right now because they're not playing right now, but there is the Royals-Orioles series, which we briefly touched on. If you're a Yankees fan, who do you want to come out of that series? What's the more favorable matchup? Because to me, I think with KC leading right now, I would prefer the Orioles somehow manage to get out because Bobby Witt Jr., in my opinion, and I talked to our very own sports director, Bobby C., about this, I think Bobby Witt Jr. is arguably just as dangerous a hitter as Aaron Judge in a different way, but he's just as dangerous. And I think that he could do some serious damage against that Yankees rotation, against that starting pitching. So who do you guys think is going to come out of the KC Orioles series? But also, what's the more favorable matchup for the Bronx?
I think that Bobby Witt Jr. at only age 24 has already become the first shortstop in MLB history to have back-to-back 30-30 seasons, let alone do it twice. I mean, like you said, threat in a different kind of way, as he's a threat on the base paths, you know, stealing. And he does have power. He hits for average as well. I mean, he is what's standing in the way of Aaron Judge, who stood in the way, rather, since the regular season's over, of winning a triple crown, because batting average-wise. But, I mean, if I'm a Yankees fan personally, I would rather face the Orioles, not even just because it's a division rivalry, but I feel their bullpen's a little more shaky with guys like Craig Kimbrell.
Well, he's gone. You know, he got DFA. So, Orioles don't have a true closer. The Royals have...
Is it Cano now?
It's anyone. It's like a committee at this point. If we're talking favorable matchup, as a Yankee fan, who would I want to see? I want to see the Kansas City Royals. I think our offense is better than them. The pitching matches up, in my opinion. Yes, they have Reagans, they have Lugo, Waka, they have a bullpen, but at the same time, the Yankees do too. On the starting rotation side of things, all right? We can match up with Reagans, we can match up with Lugo, we can match up with Waka, and you know, line up three starters to their three starters. And we showed in the regular season, we beat the season series against the Royals. All right, they were really not that much competition against us. As long as our pitching looks good, we can beat any team in the AL. I'd rather the Royals because for some reason, we don't know how to play against the Orioles. It's just a plain fact. You know, do I think we are still better than the Orioles even though the stats might not show it? Yes, because we talk about the Orioles don't have the pitching. Once you go past Burns, it's really that's it. Eflin's, you know, you never know what you're going to get with him. And the bullpen is nothing. They have no one in the bullpen. And their offense got shut out yesterday by Reagans. Yes, he's their number one. And the Royals' bullpen is really good. But, like, the Baltimore offense was terrible. You know, like, they were just that.
It's a star-studded lineup, and the stars didn't show up. Star-studded lineup,
and they were terrible. You can say the same thing about the Royals. Like, only scoring one run. I get it. Like, Burns pitched into, like, the ninth inning. And he's a Cy Young. He's an ace. But both teams that you expected great offensive, you know, years from and have a lot of star-studded players, it was a 1-0 game yesterday, you know? And if the outcome is similar today where neither team can, like, hit or score and it's going to be, like, another low-scoring game, there's no way that as a Yankee fan, I'm scared of either team, all right? Because the Yankees, they know how to score runs, at least 4 to 5 a game, I think they averaged. And their bullpen ERA was one of the best in AL, even though you kind of see all the negatives from it. You look at the overall aspect, it was still one of the best. And their offense is really good. So I rather the Royals.
It's very top heavy, though. I mean, the Yankees offense with Judge and Soto?
Yes and no. You have Torres, Soto, and Judge as your three. They have done really good in the first inning alone. They've shown why they can start your game off well. They can cause problems for the opposing team. Just in the first inning alone, if you get Torres on base and you know Soto and Judge, you don't want to pitch to them. It's the question with the Yankees is, can Wells be the best protector for Judge in situations where, let's say it's the Royals or the Orioles, they don't want to pitch to Judge in a certain situation. They're going to just intentionally walk him. Can Wells come in clutch, right? And then from Wells, can Stanton continue his postseason greatness? From him, the rest lineup, or question marks. Chaz Chisholm, how's he going to be? You know, Chisholm has some experience in the postseason with Miami, but not to the same extent where Yankee postseason games are going to bring him.
Right. Postseason.
Volpe's first year in the postseason, his regular season was not the best. How's he going to play, right?
Same with DJ LeMahieu.
LeMahieu better not even crack the roster, in my opinion. Then you have Dominguez, who has shown he is struggling playing left field, but you know the bat is there. Verdugo and him are going to, you know, basically be the left fielders. What's going to come with that? So, yes, there's a lot of question marks, but again, this is a team who is the best, who has the best record in the AL, and this is their best chance to go to the World Series because of how wide open the AL is, how wide open the entire postseason is in terms of
it's anyone's game.
Anyone's game. Every team has their weaknesses, every team has their strengths. Can your strength outcome your own weakness at the end of the day?
Well, you talk about strength. Before we wrap this thing up, I think I'm interested to hear you guys mention or guess who do you think is the real favorite to win the World Series, because I think this year has been different from other years in that there's not a single team that looks like they're so ahead of the pack, right? I think, I mean, even though the Dodgers had the best record looking at the regular season, when you look at the other teams, I don't think they're that far behind them. I don't think, even though the Mets are, you know, they won against the Brewers yesterday, I don't think the Brewers are that far behind the Dodgers. I don't think the Phillies are that far behind the Dodgers. I think in the World Series also, whoever comes out of the AL, you know, the best team at 94 wins, that was your Yankees.
Yankees, yeah.
So we didn't have a 100-win team this year, and so I think there's less of a kind of brutal opponent. The kind of, you know, I am an inevitable Thanos kind of certainty that you're talking about,
you,
John.
You love your Marvel, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, I love the references.
Of course.
There we go.
Not complaining.
When it
So Doc, our Will Talent, our assistant student manager, he just said a very interesting pick, and I think it's actually quite respectable, even though I wouldn't love it to happen because this NL team, the San Diego Padres, could win the World Series. What do you think of Doc's take back there?
They showed yesterday why they have been hot recently, why they've been such a great team ending off the season, right? Michael King, I mean, I wish he was still a Yankee. Michael King went 7 innings and 12 strikeouts, no walks against the Braves. And I get it.
He's a dog.
Maybe the Braves were, like, you know, a little hungover from their celebration the night before. But that Padres
team.
Mets
weren't.
The Mets definitely weren't. But this Padres team with Tatis, Machado, Alvarez, like
Jackson Merrill,
their offense is good. Their offense is good. But then when you factor in the pitching, we knew their bullpen was one of the top bullpens, especially after the trade deadline. You know, if you get to San Diego's bullpen, good luck. But to have an ace now like Michael King, who just threw 7 scoreless and 12 strikeouts in his first postseason start ever, I mean, there's no reason why you can't see the Padres go all the way if that's the same production you're going to get game in and game out. Now, I don't know who's starting for them today or like what their rotation is even going to look like moving forward. Yeah, today is Musgrove against Max Fried. So
he better show up with the shiny ears.
He better show up just in general. You know, you don't want the Braves to get a game and then, you know, momentum shifts. But San Diego, they have the pitching. They have the offense. They match up any team at this point. Like
Musgrove is today.
Yeah, Musgrove is pitching today. People saw him as an ace coming into the season. So imagine him being like your game 2 starter. Like that could be scary, right? So I like the Padres coming out the NL. I know that won't benefit Ben's Mets, but I still think the Phillies have a better overall team.
I'm gonna go with a very dark horse pick. I don't think anyone is giving the Cleveland Guardians enough credit.
Well, that's the AL, you know. I thought we were talking NL.
We were talking World Series. Who's your World Series pick?
Well, of course,
I think they have not done it since.
Okay, but
I think
your heart says Yankees. What does your mind say?
My mind still says Yankees.
Fair enough.
My heart says
Mets, but
do you agree with that?
My mind says Yankees, although that the Yankees have to get out the AL, of course. I think if you get the AL, the real competition to me is in the NL because the Dodgers, Phillies, and Padres, I can give them over the Yankees any day of the week. So you really have to show off that, you know, fierce competition at the World Series.
But again, we were talking about good starting rotations, insane bullpen. Cleveland has had the best bullpen in baseball.
So
their closer, Emmanuel Clase, like he's a very talented guy.
Hold on, guys. We got a Yankees fan who's also a voice of reason, our very own assistant student manager, Will Town. He's our producer, but he's also he's blessed us with the opportunity to speak on the producer mic. So Will, you gave me through the IFB, you said Padres for your pick, your kind of unexpected pick for World Series. You don't see your own Yankees doing that?
So I don't have a headset back here. You guys can hear me, right?
Yes.
That's awesome. So I'm going to give my take, and then I'm going to turn my mic off and then listen to what you guys have. It's hard to go back and forth. But here's my reasoning on the Padres. 50-50, and John, you were talking about the Mets having one of the best records. They did. The Padres went 43. What did they win? 93 games. 43-18 when they were 50-50. They are hot. Michael King looked really solid. Offense, four or five runs. That's all you need in a postseason game if your pitching is going to be that way. They also spent big on that bullpen, and it helped them out at the trade deadline. I thought they were going to catch the Dodgers, personally, to win that NL West. I think that they're hot. They're hot at the right time. Now, in terms of the AL, yeah, I honestly, no bias. I'm going to go the Yankees. That's not a biased pick whatsoever. If the Yankees are going to make it, this is the year to do it, especially if Baltimore loses today. They beat up on the Royals this year. They need to take down the Royals. Their potential championship series matchups, they also beat up on those teams. So the way that I see it for the Yankees, being a fan, you need to be confident, and this goes for all of us too. If you think your team is going to make the World Series, you got to be confident that you can take down every single team in whatever series, if it's 3, 5, or 7, on your side of the bracket, then you meet at the World Series when that time comes. I think the Yankees match up really well against everyone on the American League side of the bracket, and their offense is going to be the catalyst. I'm not really worried about the pitching. If the offense comes swinging out of the gates, they need to stay hot. It's postseason baseball. You can't have, you know, a 1-0 game. Gerrit Cole pitches 8 innings, 9 innings. Rodon does whatever he does. Offense has to stay consistent. I kind of like Yankees, Padres. My original prediction was Phillies, Astros. It's a possibility, and I had the Phillies winning. That was back in, like, March. But where we are now, I'll go Yanks, and I'll go Padres. Winner, I'm torn, man. I don't really know. Everything has kind of been up in the air. But that's my take. Thank you for letting me get my 2 cents in.
Thank you, Doc. That was...
I love the take.
That was Will Talland, our assistant student manager, and our producer for today's episode of Nosebleed. So with that, I'm just going to say some last few things. Is I think Will definitely had an interesting take there and evidence to back up his positions. And there's certainly a case to be made that the Padres can go far. But when I'm looking at the National League, this might sound like the casual take, the generic take, but the Dodgers, it's just their lineup. When you have a generational player like Shohei Ohtani in your lineup.
How about two of them, including Mookie Betts?
That's right. And Mookie Betts and Ohtani, who have both had excellent seasons. And then you also add in Teoscar Hernandez, who's been very solid. Freddie Freeman as well. Future Hall of Famer. One of the most consistent first basemen in the MLB. Look, I think this Dodgers team, Will talked about, if there's a time for the Yankees to win, it's now. I almost think that for L.A., if there's a time for them to win, it's now. Now, I know that you can dispute that and say, oh, but Shohei just signed a, you know, multi-million dollar, hundreds of millions of dollar contract to stay with them long term. But I still think they'll be very unsatisfied if they don't win with this core. I'm going to say my pick is it's going to be Dodgers versus – this is tough. I'm going to say Dodgers, Yankees. I got the Dodgers. I'm sorry. I'm not just doing that to troll. That's my pick. I'll let you guys respond briefly, and then we got to wrap this up.
Like I said, I seriously think people aren't giving the Guardians enough credit. I could see them making it on the
Dodgers
AL
Guardians?
Side. Yeah. I'm not going to argue with you. I would love to say Mets, but no, realistically, I think that the Dodgers would be my NL pick because they just have everything going for them. They seriously do. There's not, like we were talking about, weak spots in the lineup other than an unreliable postseason Kershaw, who I don't even know if he's going to play because of injuries, but they really have the least amount of holes. So I'm taking the Dodgers over the Guardians in a World Series this year.
Okay, I'm taking Dodgers over Yankees. You're taking Dodgers over Guardians. And Brody, you're taking...
I'm taking the Yankees and the Padres. I have to agree with Will on this aspect of things.
So Padres over the Yanks?
No. I'm taking the Yankees against the Padres, but I'm still taking the Yankees over the Padres. All right.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to say this. I'm trying to say this as unbiased as possible.
Sure.
I understand why the Guardians, you know, they're a good team bullpen-wise, but I'm not worried about their offense, honestly. It's really Ramirez, and that's it, in my opinion. And then you look at the other teams. It's once you can shut down one of their guys, I think you're good, and you can just beat the pitching. It's – this is the year for the Yankees to make it out the AL. As long as the Padres continue doing what they're doing in dominant fashion, I think they can beat any team in the NL postseason race as is, even if it's the Dodgers, if it's the Phillies, if it's the Mets, whoever it is, Milwaukee. They're definitely a team with, it doesn't seem like any holes at this moment. You know, starting pitching is good, bullpen's good, offense is good. And as long as anything unexpected happens, I think for the Padres, something unexpected has to happen for them to not make the World Series, in my opinion. So I'm going to keep that. I'm going to just agree with Will on the pick, but I'm just going to disagree on the winner with him.
Well, there you have it, folks. That was the latest episode, the postseason edition episode of Nosebleeds, the exclusive WFUV sports podcast dedicated to bringing you Major League Baseball coverage. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We had a great show today. It was great to get input from our producer, Will Town, also our assistant student manager. It was great to be on here with my friends, John and Angel. I'm Ben Oppenheimer. See you next week.